right, everybody, welcome back to the Strength Academy podcast. Grayson here, joined by Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
All right, guys, this is episode 40, so that means that we have been speculating wildly for 40 episodes now. I don't know, does it feel like it's been that long to you?
No, I don't really, like, look back at it and think that we started it that long ago. Like, it doesn't seem like we started it that long ago, and, like, we're already 40 episodes into it, and we haven't been doing it consistently, like, every single week, but, like, almost every week we're releasing an episode, so I think we're moving along pretty well. It's impressive.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that I think once we made it a habit, it definitely has just kind of started racking itself up. So, you know, the first 10 episodes, it was, you know, it felt like we kind of had to really kind of get over that speed bump to get things rolling. Yeah. But now it's kind of just operated on as assumption that this is what we're doing every week. Do it,
right.
And yeah, it's definitely been really interesting.
It's been interesting for me because, like, in a way I'm just getting to have a conversation with you about the kind of things that you think about both in weightlifting terms and just in philosophy in general. So, like, I don't really have those kind of conversations outside of the podcast as often with other people. So, like, I really enjoy the idea of, like, getting to talk about weightlifting, which is something we both enjoy, and then some, like, philosophical ideas as well, which we both enjoy and think about quite often too. So, like, it's a great outlet for me, and if you guys listen and enjoy it, I appreciate that, and you know, keep listening in.
Yeah. So if you're enjoying it, and you want to keep pushing us into the, you know, next 40 episodes, go ahead and, you know, subscribe to the podcast, write a review. I found out we're on iHeartRadio. Did you know that?
I did not know we were.
We didn't even have to do that. We're just up there.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
Wherever you listen to your podcast, you can check us out.
Oh, bonus. All right.
All right, guys. So we've got a couple of ideas that we're going to talk about today. And the first one is that since we are coming up to AO2, or if you're coming up to competing in any sort of larger meet, be it AO3 later this year or your first American Open, any of those sort of things, one of the things that's going to come up is that you might be lifting at a time that you're not accustomed to. So the majority of our lifters, I think the vast majority, tend to train in the evenings, with the exception of, you know, maybe training Saturday mornings.
Right.
And that just makes sense because most people are working full-time jobs. Not everybody can get up at 10 and train at 11.
Right.
So there's going to be a good chance that you're lifting at a time that you're not used to. So in your experience, Mundo, what is like the hardest time adjustment you've had to make doing a few of these meets? Because I know that you've had both a very early session and a late session.
Yeah. So I think the most variation I've had is probably AO3 in Las Vegas. And the reason for that one was because I went really late in the evening, which I don't usually work out that late. I think my session started at like 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I had already been coaching all day. There was three other athletes prior to me that were competing. And so, like, I had been there from weigh-ins to throughout the whole process, from the first person that weighed in to the time that I went, you know. And, like, that was probably the hardest day that I've had being a coach and an athlete. And I didn't want to repeat that again. But it looks like I will kind of have a taste of it again here at AO2. But and the reason was is, like, I wasn't really prepared to deal with the mental exhaustion that comes along with coaching and then having a lift afterward and then so late in the evening. Usually by the time that 8 o'clock rolls around, I'm already gearing down for bed, you know, winding down, like doing the things that I normally do. I would probably just be, have had dinner and then maybe start watching, you know, a TV show or start reading and then just winding down from the day. But, like, gearing myself up to lift and trying to lift in a competition where I'm, you know, going for, you know, personal best and things like that, that was probably one of the hardest experiences I've ever had. And another thing that kind of like was weird for me is when I competed at Masters Worlds in Spain, we went early in the morning.
Oh yeah.
So and it wasn't difficult because it was such a different time zone, because obviously, you know, they're like 12 hours ahead from Albuquerque time. And so like that adjusting over to the new country's time zone and being, you know, in a different climate and things like that wasn't as hard. It was harder coming back from that.
Okay.
But so like traveling to places for me, like we've been to Miami, we competed at AO2 in Miami, and then AO1 in Reno, and I think that was in 2017. And like going to these competitions, flying out for me, I don't always feel great. Like I always seem to get like bloated when I fly. I just don't feel like fantastic. And then like, you know, airport food sucks, but you kind of deal with those things, and I've kind of learned to, like, that's part of the process of traveling and competing. But we have home field advantage this time to do that. And so I've been kind of working around making my schedule as similar to when I'm going to lift as possible. So I'm going to go on Friday. And most of the 73s, obviously, are going to go on Friday. All of them are going on Friday. But, like, people that compete and they usually, like, max out on Saturday might want to think about maxing out on a Friday morning or a Friday evening, just to feel what that's like, you know, because a lot of these people, if they come from other parts of the country, you know, they've been working jobs, they've been, you know, having their schedule be a certain way for a long time, and then all of a sudden they got a lift on a day that they don't normally lift on at a time they don't normally lift. So, like, it could throw off a lot of things. It could throw off the way you feel approaching the competition. It can throw off your mental game. So, like, you have to be prepared for the idea that, like, it's going to be a little different than what you're used to. So, I know that, like, for you, you're probably going to go on Saturday, and more likely, like, Saturday afternoon. But you don't usually train on Saturday afternoon. You usually train, like, on Friday. So, how do you think that might affect you? And how do you think that might affect other lifters? Because we have other people that are going early in the morning, and they don't usually lift until in the evening, like you said. You know, they work normal jobs.
So the majority of the times that the couple of times I've competed at kind of these multi-session events, the first go around was at University Nationals in 2015. We had a really early session. So I think I weighed in at 6 a.m. and lifted at 8.
Okay.
And anticipating that, for the training cycle leading up to that, Tyler and I shifted our training to earlier in the morning so that we got used to kind of lifting at that time. And I think that some things that I learned, if you're going to have an early weigh-in and an early lift, is, well, obviously you have to go to bed earlier. That's very important. So yeah. Training, and you can't just anticipate that you're going to be able to go to bed earlier the day before, because if you're kind of set in your ways and you're kind of grooved to fall asleep at midnight, but you're going to have to weigh in at 6, which means you have to get up at 5, which means you have to get there by 5:30 and get to the check scale and all of that. Or, you know, even if you have to manipulate weight that morning,
right,
it's going to be pretty challenging. You're going to have to get up pretty early. So if you are going to be lifting early in the morning, it's pretty safe to say that at least a couple weeks beforehand, try to start getting to bed a little bit earlier. Because even if you work and you can't train at that time, you want to get used to being alert at that time and going to sleep early enough that you can get an 8 or 9 hour block in before that. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty useful for that University Nationals scenario. I felt pretty good warming up. But in Vegas the last time, I also had an 8 a.m. and I did not do those things.
Right.
So knowing that I was lifting earlier in the day, and that for me personally, I'm always, I think this is probably for everybody, but I'm most stiff early in the morning.
Yeah.
Budgeting in time to have maybe an extra cup of coffee and do some extra kind of a longer warm up. So if you're going earlier in the day and it's not when you're used to training, anticipate taking a little longer to warm up. and get things firing on all cylinders. It's not to say that you can't, because you absolutely can.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you get rolling, it's all going to feel pretty much the same, I think. But anticipating how long it's going to take you to get rolling, if you don't have an opportunity to practice lifting at that time of day, at least anticipate needing to spend a little extra time getting loose for the squat and waking yourself up. That's taking a little extra caffeine or building yourself a good Spotify playlist to kind of psych yourself up that day. I think for the most part, though, you don't really have to worry about generating enough emotional arousal at meets. In fact, most of the time you're trying to calm yourself down.
Yeah.
So I don't think you have to worry about being not psyched up enough, because for the most part, like, once you're back there, you've got some nervous energy anyway. So I think that you can definitely, as long as you anticipate taking extra time to warm up and trying to get your sleep schedule lined up in these last 3 weeks to where you're going to be able to get enough sleep the night before. So you're not trying to NyQuil yourself at 1 a.m. Because those pre-competition jitters, I don't know if you get that night before.
I'll get them before I go for a PR. Like, I'll get that jittery feeling, like, just need to stay calm. Because, like, I'll get nervous before I attempt a new weight. And so it's not, I have that same feeling on the competition platform. It's just like that same little bit of nervousness. It's not like fear. It's more like
thrill.
Yeah, it's kind of like sitting on the roller coaster, cranking up on the way up to that, like, the top of the drop. Like, that's what it feels like to me. It's just like that anticipation of, like, let's do this type thing. But yeah, it just depends. Every person's a little bit different, and they react differently to it.
Yeah, and as far as, you know, evening lifting goes, there's a couple of strategies that I think... I know that a lot of people, when they go to these, have lots of teammates competing.
Yeah.
But if you're weighing in at 5 p.m. and one of your teammates is lifting at 8 a.m., sleep through their session.
You'll see some video recaps.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like, you're going to want to go and you're going to want to support your team. But you have to also kind of put your performance up higher. So if you're shorting your sleep to make it to an earlier session, or even just watching too many lifters and too many sessions throughout the day, you're getting that emotional rise and that nervousness, and all of that slowly wears on you a little bit. Especially sitting in the crowd, because you're sitting on an uncomfortable chair, maybe you're tightening up. And if you've watched 6 hours of weightlifting over 12 hours and then you're competing at the end of it, you're not really doing yourself any favors. So if you're going late in the day, plan on, you know, maybe getting there an hour early, or you can live stream some people. But if you're going late in the day, try to sleep in as long as you can and focus on, you know, maybe loosening up a little bit early in the day. If you're allowed to eat, then eat. But if you're cutting weight, you're not hungry while you're asleep. So if you can kind of nap your way closer and closer to your weigh-in time, I'd say that's probably a good idea as far as approaching a late afternoon weigh-in.
Yeah.
Try to make sure that you're fresh and that you're not up worrying for 8 hours before you lift.
Yeah, that's true. And so, like, I think that for a lot of our folks, this is going to be their first competition at this level. I guess it's considered a national level meet.
Yeah,
that's debatable, but
it's the lower tier.
Yeah, so, like, it's comparable. You would be doing the same things at this meet that you would at AO finals and nationals, like, as far as, like, weighing in, warming up, being assigned to a platform, introductions, all that kind of stuff, all the things that go along with being at this level of competition. They're going to experience it. So there's just a lot to take in for a lot of these guys. It's their first time, like I said. So there's a lot of factors that will come into play in their performance, and I hope that each of them, if they're listening, that they're doing what they need to leading up to it to make themselves successful. I mean, we're trying to get them to the point where they're peaking and performing their best, but they also have to put in some effort to make sure that they have a good experience as well, and hopefully listen to some of the things that we've said over the past few months to them about preparing. So one thing that I wanted to talk about as well, so since we're leading up to competition and things like that, and we're starting to get into the phase where things are heavy, and I know that a lot of people start to experience some discomfort, maybe even some pain, and we're trying to differentiate between like something that's going to stop you from competing or stopping from lifting, and stuff that's just uncomfortable, that sucks because it's hard. And so a lot of the time, I think that people will feel a little uncomfortable, or something gets a little bit overworked, or you know, out of position, and it might get not injured, but like maybe tweaked a little bit, and they just need to back off or do something. But how do they recognize? And I'm sure we've kind of got over this before in previous podcasts, but like it seems to be a recurring thing where people say I'm injured, but they're not really injured, or they're not really hurt. It just feels uncomfortable, or something just like doesn't feel exactly like the way it did before, or they're making an adaptation, so like things are changing, their hips are getting lower in a squat, so they possibly have a different range of motion issue, and now the knees are starting to ache a little bit. So there's things that they need to address because they're getting better, or they're getting better ranges of motion, or they're strengthening one area, so now they're starting to show deficiencies in other areas. So how do we get the lifters to recognize like, oh, I need to go see somebody for this, or like I just need to work on stretching a little more and maybe some additional accessory to kind of like balance out this problem that I'm having?
So when I think about basically when do you need to back off something, and when is it okay to keep training?
Right.
And for me, things that I look for is this something that I'm worried about, is does it improve as you warm up, is the first thing.
Right.
So if you have some discomfort in your wrists when you're warming up, if you do 20 reps of empty barbell work, do your wrists feel better? Then it might not be something that you necessarily need to get seen for.
Sure.
You know, so there's a lot of things that will ache when you're starting out. You know, your first couple squats of the day when you're training hard don't feel particularly nice. You know, the first few air squats you do.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that that's a huge red flag and that your training session is going to be worthless. It just means that you might need to warm up a little longer to get everything kind of operating together as a unit. So for me, a lot of times, you know, I'll have a little bit of achiness in my knees or in my elbow, but if I warm up long enough and I make sure that I'm doing some extra presses with the bar and that I'm getting everything as prepared for the session as possible,
right,
that pain decreases and largely goes away. Now, where you want to start thinking about getting something looked at is if it's been a recurring problem. So it's not, I hit my knee hurt on Monday but felt fine by Wednesday. That's not something you need to necessarily worry about. Sometimes those floating aches and pains come and go. Sometimes you'll even get weird kind of phantom floating pain where something will hurt in like four different areas but just rotating.
Yeah.
And that can sometimes be a referral thing, but that can also just be an indication that that's a tight area and that your body's kind of trying to get you to lay off it a little bit. But I think if it's a recurring problem or it doesn't get better when you warm up, those are kind of two things that might be, okay, maybe it is time to go get a little soft tissue work done, or go see somebody to let you know what you need to be changing to make that kind of feel better.
Yeah.
But hardly ever is there, in the absence of a really acute injury, a time that you need to take entirely off. Because even if you tweak something, it's better to go in and train the things that you can.
Right.
So there's no injury that precludes any and all training. If your back's a little tweaked, you might just do lots of presses for 3 days. But it's still better to do those presses than to take all the time off.
Yeah.
You want to be continuing to load. And oftentimes, you know, if something is angry, it just means that you need to spend some time in your accessories or your cooldowns working on that area.
Right.
So for me, if it's bothering you even after you warm up, or if when you warm up, it feels okay, but as soon as you stop, it locks up and is really painful, then that's a time that you need to kind of go get something seen. Because to me, sensation-wise, which is kind of maybe hard to generalize to people, but for my personal inventory check-in is a dull ache or a slight tug feeling is, for me, not necessarily a red flag. That's just spend some time stretching, make sure you're eating and drinking enough water. Those things tend to resolve themselves through proper warm-ups and cool-downs and staying on top of your stretching.
Okay.
But for something that's sharp or shooting or radiating, then that's where, or like really restricted or visibly like inflamed.
Yeah.
That's for me my threshold of, do I need to get this looked at? Do I need to avoid certain movements, or can I train through this?
Yeah.
Is essentially that is if something is more on that sharp, acute, very painful end of things.
Yeah.
And I tend not to worry too much about achiness, because achiness is just from work, you know.
Yeah.
If you've ever, you know, done a few hours of manual labor, it's not that you're injured, it's just everything hurts because you're sore.
You're tired, yeah.
Yeah, you're tired and you're kind of, like, beaten down, but that doesn't mean that there's something wrong necessarily.
Yeah. So let me add on to that a little bit. And number one, we're not doctors.
All right? This is not medical advice.
This is not medical advice at all. So, but my experience with it has been this. If you warm up and the pain or the discomfort goes away, then you need to kind of work on stretching and doing some recovery, icing, or some other things like that. If you continue to work out and it hurts the entire time with no reprieve, then it's probably something you need to go get seen for. And here's how I kind of like had my experience with that. So last year I had this real bad pain along my IT band. It was just south of the upper trochanter of the femur.
Okay.
So there's a bursa sac that sits on top of that, in that area. And it's like right outside that hip. So like the IT band, the TFL, all these big muscle groups attached to that area. It's because they're moving in that hip socket in that joint. And so there's a lot of like moving parts and big muscular groups in that small section. And I was having a hard time just walking. Like, it hurt to walk. Like, it was painful. And so, like, I would still train, I would still squat, but I knew that my squat was being hampered by this. And no matter how much I would warm up, I'd try to put voodoo floss on it, I tried, you know, scraping it, I tried dry needling, and nothing really seemed to work, and it just kept getting worse, and it started to hurt more and more all the time. And this was right before I was trying to, you know, train for Worlds, and I just had this substantial amount of pain that I had to deal with on a daily basis when I trained, and then even when I wasn't training, it was still present. So that's how I knew. It was like, this is a problem. I really got to get seen for this and get it taken care of. So the bursa sac was inflamed. I had to get a shot in that bursa sac to decrease inflammation, and then I had to go to PT to re-educate my glutes to start firing when I was squatting, because basically that TFL muscle was taking over a large portion of the work. So like, that muscle's not designed to be put under that much load that often. And so I had to kind of like go through about 8 weeks of PT, continue to do some of the things that I was already doing, like stretching and dry needling and some things that in addition to that PT work, but like it finally went away and I could finally squat again without pain. I could finally walk without pain. And so like for me, that was a huge thing because like not only did it affect my training, but it affected just my daily life in general. I was pretty grumpy. Like I didn't want to deal with anybody or anything because like I was in constant pain. But once I figured out what was causing the problem and I was able to remedy it, like everything started to rectify itself. Like I started to squat better. Like my number started going back up. I started to get strong again. And so like for me, I know that there's times when I can train through pain, even though it might not be maximal, but I know the difference between what's painful and what's discomfort. Like, so for me, I know that if it just sucks and it's not great, I know that it's discomfort. And then if it's just achy or if something just feels like a little tired, I know what that is. But if it hurts and it hurts all the time and it's nonstop, it's like a relentless, then it's probably something that you need to go get seen for. And so like that's why I say we're not doctors. I'm not offering you medical advice. That's just my experience with it. And when other people approach me with the same kind of like inquiries, I ask them those same types of questions. I was like, well, when you warm up, does it go away? How often does it come back? Or how long does it last when you're warming up? Or does it ever, you know, go away? And so that helps me tell them what they need to maybe look into. So if it's like, oh, well, it goes away as I warm up and then I forget about it. And then it comes back when I'm done training and I cool down. It's like, well, then you should probably spend some time doing this or that to it, stretching, icing, taking ibuprofen or something like that. Just if it's a Band-Aid and it just needs some time to recover, that's one thing. But if it's hurting all the time, if it's just there's something constantly you're dealing with no matter what you do, then you probably need to go see, you know, somebody to help you fix it.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really good point in that if it's something that bothers you a little bit in training, that's very different than I can't take the stairs anymore.
Right, yeah.
You know, like yeah. if it's directly impacting things outside of the gym, like you can't reach up to grab something off the shelf because your shoulder hurts so bad.
Yeah.
That's definitely, like you need to get that checked out.
Right.
And I think that, you know, I oftentimes when talking to people, you know, I try not to say you should or you shouldn't, but yeah. I always kind of encourage, like, if it's something that's worrying you, it's good to play it safe and get it evaluated.
Yeah, sure.
Now, if it's the week before a competition and this competition really matters to you, that's a personal choice whether you want to push through something that doesn't feel super great.
Yeah.
If you know that you're going to be able to take the time off afterward to evaluate and assess that thing. But if it feels like your knees are exploding, then you know, you're gonna wanna, like, you should be trying to learn your own body to the point that you know where that line is.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in trying to find that line, a lot of us tend to go past it sometimes. And, you know, like, get caught up in things and say, and blow it off for too long. But when you look at hindsight, prior to that arm that hurts so badly that you can't, you know, get soup off the shelf.
Yeah.
If you look back, there were probably little signs earlier on that now you know what those kind of feelings and signs are, and you can intervene earlier in your next endeavor.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta find that, you know, you basically have to learn your body and what are the signs of something not being right. And having some eyes on you while you're lifting to say, hey, this position is going to hurt later on.
Yeah.
This is not the right position. If you keep training here, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
That's really helpful. But also just being able to identify the difference between I'm sore from this and I'm aggravating something.
Right.
And I think that, unfortunately, that's a bit of trial and error. I think that some people are overly cautious, and I think that some people are overly confident.
Yeah, there's that. Well, that's the line that everybody's got to find. And the thing is that when you look at weightlifting relative to other sports, weightlifting has a very low injury rate. So the idea of getting injured while you're lifting weights, it's not very high. Like the injury rate, when you look across the board at basketball, football, a lot of these sports that have the potential for concussive injuries, broken bones, things like that. Like, a lot of people don't experience those things in weightlifting. Most of the time, their injuries come from things that happen outside of it, or when they're doing things that aren't related to weightlifting itself. Like, we had an athlete recently just kind of like sprain something, and she's still able to train, but like, she didn't sprain anything while she was weightlifting. It just happened outside of it. Like, you're doing normal life activities, or you're participating in something, and then something happens, and you twist an ankle, or you sprain a wrist, or you're out hiking and you get lost and you get dehydrated for 10 hours. Like, like that kind of stuff.
Not to name any names.
Yeah, not to name any names, but like, stuff like that happens. But those carry over into weightlifting, obviously, because like, how does a swollen ankle affect your lifts? How does being dehydrated the previous day, or lost and freaked out the previous day, kind of like translate into your mind state the next training session? So I think that when people look at weightlifting and they see like fail videos and things like that, like, those are the exceptions.
Yeah,
like, that doesn't happen very often. And there's some times where like, I've seen videos of people in training camps, and people at training camps have a tendency to push each other a little more. So they're maybe attempting weights that they shouldn't have any business doing. So there's some potential for like some things to happen, some mistakes to be made, or like misses to happen, and maybe drop the barbell on yourself. But those don't happen nearly as often as people think they do. I mean, those are like the 1 in 1,000 occurrences that people are pushing too hard, too fast, and not doing it the correct way with proper techniques. Like, you can tell when things fall apart. Like, that's when people get injured, is when they're trying to push too hard, too far, too fast with beyond their ability. Like, they just don't have a good scope of like what they're capable of doing. And there's a difference between having confidence in yourself and your ability, and then just overreaching. And I think that injuries or those mishaps, because sometimes people will drop barbells on themselves and not get injured anyway.
Yeah,
like, it's just scary. But I think for a majority of people, it's like, over time you build up this level of tightness and things like that, because your muscles are growing, they're expanding. They're that's where that soreness comes from. That delayed onset muscle soreness is just your muscles recovering, getting bigger, getting stronger, more adaptations. But those adaptations also require a response from you in terms of recovery. So like, stretching, making sure you eat enough, staying hydrated, all those play in a factor of like how well you recover. And if you're not taking care of those, and then all of a sudden your shoulders start to get achy, they don't hurt, they're just achy. Just like, you need to spend some more time doing some other stuff, as opposed to like, oh, your shoulders, like, you have a torn labrum. Like, you're Googling yourself to death, and before you even really know what's wrong.
Yeah, before you Google, try stretching. Yeah. But yeah, so weightlifting, those acute injuries are less frequent, and the majority of the injuries you see are related to overuse, or, just slight errors in position causing a, angry kind of response in one area that's just getting a little too much pressure put on it.
Yeah.
But because most of those things are overuse, if you're in better tune with what the precursors to that feel like, for instance, if you're moving up a weight class, you need to do twice as much stretching as if you're not. Because your gut, when muscle grows in, it doesn't grow in
perfectly flexible.
Perfectly flexible. So like, there's that constant battle between the goal of adding muscle and maintaining flexibility, because they're kind of, they opposite ends.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure that if you're, putting on a lot of mass, that you're pairing those kind of hypertrophy phases of your training with enough stretching to make sure that you're not, just tightening up, because you want to get bigger and stronger, And there's that trade-off between the stronger you get, sometimes the tighter you get. And you got to maintain that balance within lifting in order to kind of achieve the results that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So basically, if it's interfering with your ability to sleep, do daily activities, that's when you want to look at backing off. If you're close to a competition, that's where you have to make that decision and really take it seriously of, do I want to push through this because I want to do this meet?
Yeah.
Or do I need to back off a little bit and maybe do lighter weights than I wanted? Or in the worst case scenario, if it feels really terrible, is it worth it to your long-term career to force yourself to do that competition? Or is it better to save it for the next one?
Yeah.
And be sort of disappointed, but not broken.
Right.
Because if you push through something and then have to take 6 months to rehab it, you're further behind than if you had just like called it a little earlier.
Right.
And that's a decision that only you as the athlete can make. Your coaches can help you kind of rationalize and see what's a good idea or a bad idea there. But at the end of the day, that's your responsibility and decision, as is learning to identify what's achy and what's potentially an onset of an injury. And nobody else knows how you feel. That's all very subjective. So I think that just being cognizant of, you know, does it feel better when you warm up or not? And just trying to stay in tune with your body and not force something that isn't there that day. Sometimes you just need to take a day or two where you're working a little lighter.
Yeah.
Like if your knee hurts on Monday, maybe it's just we'll skip squats this week and do powers and then hit it again next week. And you're going to have that extra time to recover.
Yeah.
But if something is bothering you and you are working with a coach, make sure that you're talking about it, because it's hard. Sometimes you can catch it. If you watch someone lift and they wince and their face is all torn up, you can tell that something is bothering that person. But for those kind of very passive-faced, like calm, collected people who have a high pain tolerance, your coach can't always tell if something hurts.
Yeah.
Only you, and you, if you're not talking about it, then they're not going to be modifying your program. So if they gave you an assigned workout and you're elbows hurt like crazy throughout the whole thing, but you slog through it anyway because that's what you're supposed to do. 9 times out of 10, if you told your coach that's how bad it hurts, they would have you do something else to make that hurt less instead.
Yeah.
So like you have to be in open communication about how you're feeling and whether it's appropriate to do that or if you need to adjust course for a couple days, because a lot of times you just have to make a small modification for a few days or a week, and then everything's back to normal.
Right.
But you just got to be confident enough that no one's going to be mad at you if you say, this hurts, can I do something else
today?
Yeah,
yeah.
Because that's just smart.
Right.
But if you're just, you know, sore from doing squats and you don't want to do it, you got to learn to separate those things. But,
In the case of like,
be smart.
Yeah, just be smart. Just you know, have some open communication with your coach, and you know, if they're reasonable people, then they'll modify things for you and help you get back to where you're lifting at your full potential, as opposed to being half injured or half like in pain. So yeah, just keep that open line of communication. So all right, so we kind of went over a little bit of, you know, some of that competition prep and scheduling as far as like when you're going to lift and some of the things that you can do to kind of help you prepare for some changes in the time that you lift, and then some injury and discomfort prevention and recognition. And so kind of one of the things that we were talking about earlier, and this is not necessarily weightlifting related, but more like philosophy related, was that thinking about how you think, right? And the things that, the way you think, why you think what you think, and like what your thought processes entail. And we can tie this into weightlifting, but I just kind of wanted to branch out into this area of thought where, like, the way that we view our world from an internal perspective, like the voice that's in your head. And it's weird. It's even weird to me to kind of like say it that way, the voice that's in your head, because you do have a voice in your head. Like if you're speaking and your mouth's not moving, there's still a voice that's in your head that's speaking, and you think through it. And so, but like those thoughts that you encounter every day that just pop into your head, or that you're constantly mulling over, you know, what makes those thoughts significant and valid when you're going through your day, or when you're doing any self-reflection, if you do self-reflection, right? So like what makes the idea of thinking about what you think so interesting to you?
Well, so there's a handful of kind of instances and ways to be reflective on your own thinking. And I think that the first, we're just using the word think all over the place.
Yeah.
I believe the first thing you want to do is you can kind of learn to find what the emotional triggers of certain emotions are. So if you find yourself being angry, instead of living in that kind of moment, try to go back and say, okay, what set me off just now?
Right.
And then you can kind of carry yourself down a bit of a rabbit hole where you're like, okay, well, that set me off. What about that made me angry? Was I angry because someone cut me off because I felt like they were kind of being disrespectful? Or what's the like trigger of those sort of things? And you can kind of, if you're jealous, or even if you're happy about something,
right?
You know, if you're having a really good day, sometimes it's important to kind of say, what's making today really good? What am I doing here?
Right.
That's making this feel all right. And then, so it's thinking about, you know, why certain things, why you're experiencing things the way that you are sometimes, kind of reflecting on what were the precursors or the buildup to both good and bad phenomenon in your experience. But I think that one of the really interesting things is, you know, cultivating the ability to try on different ideas and different worldviews. Because I think a lot of the time we get set in one way of thinking about things, and we kind of get wrapped up in whatever the dogma or the schema of, you know, how we usually look at a scenario.
Okay.
But you can kind of think of different ideas, be it, you know, philosophical ideas, political ideas, as like toys. Like you can play with ideas.
Right.
So an example would be like, if you're, say, you know, you listen to one of our episodes about, you know, the Stoic approach to philosophy, and you say, okay, well, I don't want people to buy into things right away.
Right.
I think that you need to maintain kind of a healthy skepticism, and to find out if an idea is functional for you, you have to kind of wear that hat for a little while. So maybe you put on the Stoic hat for a week and you view things through that lens, and you say, okay, well, what was useful about this and what was not so useful? And you can take the elements of things that work for you and keep them without being attached to the whole system as a whole.
Right.
You can kind of, you know, recognizing that sometimes the things that you believe are choices. And if you choose your belief structure to fit the scenario you're in, you can kind of be a little, I mean, it's almost wishy-washy, where, you know, if I believe that, so like an example of something that you can believe and not believe. So if you're kind of a materialist, scientific materialist, where you're like, this is just the universe and there's nothing else, and that's kind of your general default. But then you kind of hear people talk about, you know, idealism, where thoughts shape matter, right?
Okay.
So that's kind of that, you know, if you're putting something out and you're thinking a certain way, that thing is more likely to happen. That might not be literally true, but it might be beneficial to you to operate as if that were true, because you might have a more positive experience. So if you believe that you're putting out these ideas like, I'm going to get stronger today. And by willing it, I'm going to manifest it. That might not literally be true, but it might be a valid belief to wear for the time.
Right. Even if it's like a placebo effect type thing.
Yeah. So it's learning to kind of separate like, okay, is this a useful belief versus a true belief?
Right.
And sometimes, you know, it requires you to kind of be really skeptical about the extent to which you know things and to try to be flexible enough that you can kind of use these philosophies to your advantage by picking and choosing what seems to work for you.
Yeah.
And kind of building things up around there. Because I think that a lot of times people try to go all in on one avenue. But I don't know about you, but I feel like I believe very different things on a daily basis. I don't feel like I'm very like set in stone on a lot of the things that I think.
Yeah.
Some days I'm more sympathetic to some ideas than others, and some days certain things are more useful to me than others. And I don't know if I'm making sense.
You're making sense. And the thing is just like, so if you're not open-minded to experiencing the world in a different way, then you're only going to experience it in one way. Right. So if your belief is that the world is against you and it's always negative, then you're probably going to have a negative experience in general. But if you can open up to saying, well, like for me, for instance, here's an example. So people are usually problematic, right? If we existed by ourselves, isolated by ourselves, we probably wouldn't have as many dramatic experiences and fallouts and bad things happen to us, but we also wouldn't have any positive experiences either. It would be like neutral.
Yeah.
So instead of saying like bad experiences exist because bad people exist, you say people in general are like your training partners, right? They are there to teach you something. They might be ignorant of the fact that they're teaching you that thing, but they're teaching it to you nonetheless. So in a practical way, you're saying this is an opportunity to practice patience. This person is being, you know, unreasonable right now, but I can practice patience right now. Or this person is being ungrateful, but I can practice gratitude. Or so like you, other people can teach you to behave and look at the world in a better way, even though that they're not doing the same thing themselves. So there's a practical way to like approach how you interact with the world. And so for me, like adopting, like if somebody tells me something that I don't necessarily agree with, like I'm not mad at that person. I'm not even mad at the concept. I'm just saying like, I don't agree with that concept. That's a concept that doesn't like fit into my view of the world. Not necessarily because like I believe it's wrong or there's something about it that like, is off. It's just that when I hold it up to the things that I value, it just doesn't have that much importance to me. So they might have a lot of emphasis and importance placed on it, but I don't necessarily value that. So like when people bring up things that are like religious in nature to me, like I don't necessarily agree with them, but if it helps them, that's fine. But it doesn't hold a lot of importance to me. So like that's how I view it, and that's like I'm still open-minded. I'll listen to somebody else's experience and listen to whatever it is that, you know, they think is an influential positive factor in their life. And to me, it might not be. But, you know, I'm open enough to allow them to say, well, that's what they believe. And, you know, if it's helping them, that's fine. It doesn't affect me. I don't have any problem with it, whether it exists or doesn't. To me, it's irrelevant. It's if it's helping them and it doesn't affect me in a negative way, I don't have any problem with it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, a part of that is when you're exposed to a new idea, you want to kind of be flexible enough with your own ideologies that you're not ossifying and you're not stuck in the same realm. So right. I think that it's important to, when you're exposed to a new idea, to kind of take a few steps. Like the first would be like, how does this idea agree or disagree with some other things that I believe?
Right.
is this idea useful for changing the way that I perceive certain situations? And does it improve my well-being in that way? What are the pros and cons of this? And how does it measure up to my ideas of what kind of scrutiny there needs to be? Or, you know, are there more downsides to this way of thinking than not? You know, maintaining that skepticism about knowing things for certain.
Right.
Because I think that when people get caught in kind of their own loop is when they feel they have a sense of certainty about something. And I think maintaining, you know, skepticism over the things that you know and maintaining the possibility that you might be totally wrong about everything.
Yeah.
At all times, it's not comforting. I think that that's the important thing to kind of say is having this attitude doesn't really make for being super comfortable with things. It means that you're kind of always questioning and always searching and always trying to find more. Because for every thing that you find, there's like 10 questions. And then you have to go down those holes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't allow you to be complacent, but I think it also allows you to kind of say, all right, these are the, what values do I have? And then how useful are those values? And if they're not useful, get rid of them.
Yeah.
And find something that's more kind of fitting. And I think that some kind of areas to, you know, if you're looking at, say, even opinions about, you know, technique and lifting,
sure.
You know, if you survey and you read, you know, 10 different experts, instead of just taking one of their words for it, I think it's important to say, what are the similarities between what all these people are saying? What are the general themes that are there? What's everybody kind of agree on? They might be using different words. They might be using different terms.
Yeah.
But the truth is probably somewhere, not in any one system, but across systems. Right. What are the principles that apply to everybody? Because, you know, if you've got, you know, like, oh, I do a Russian style, or I do a Chinese style, or I do a, you know, whatever. Or we do a strength-based program, or we do a technique-based program. What's everybody kind of agreeing on? What are the general things that need to be going the right way across all of the spectrums? And you can apply this to, you know, if you, you know, apply it to politics. It's like, okay, well, what are the things that everybody's agreeing about? What are the things that, you know, are going to be kind of base principles? Because if you examine a wide enough array, you can see where people are disagreeing and where people are agreeing. And that kind of base level of agreement is probably where you want to start your analysis. Where okay. It's, you know, if you're trying to be an independent thinker, you want to evaluate what people are doing well and what people aren't, and be skeptical of everybody and not just buy in on, I only follow this person,
yeah.
And I only do it this way. Because I think that you're kind of, you might be missing out on some things. You might be getting 80% really, really good quality information, but you might be missing out on a couple of other things here or there.
So, like, you couldn't, it's not wise to live your life by, like, what would so-and-so do? Because if, like, that's your only model of behavior, then you might not be open to other experiences.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, like, even if you kind of go and look to, like, playing with ideas that are obviously kind of on the fringe.
Right.
Like, so, like, a fun idea that I play with sometimes is this guy, there's a few, like, fringe archaeologists that speculate there was, like, advanced civilization prior to the Ice Age.
Sure.
And there's just a handful of scientists that kind of think this might be a possibility. And while I recognize that on one hand, it's like, yeah, that doesn't really live up to my level of scrutiny. If I suspend that belief, right, I selectively say, okay, well, this isn't true, or not usually how I would rate things as true, but how can I play with this idea? And when they speculate about, okay, well, what if this was a culture based on this? It kind of allows you to kind of suspend that belief and use those kind of more fringy ideas to say, what would a society of advanced technology that's not the way that we think about technology. So maybe, you know, they speculate that maybe they were doing more kind of like, you know, had like a shamanistic society where people had extra mental energy and like kind of all kinds of just crazy stuff.
Sure, yeah.
But through that kind of crazy idea, you can kind of start thinking critically about what are the different ways that a society could be shaped. What if we had a society based around X instead of Y? So you kind of have this idea of you're using a more fringe idea to stimulate different ways of thinking about the world, and whether or not that's true in itself bears no impact on the value of the ways that you critically examined the world that we currently live in. So like, what if we had a society that was based around maintaining or being closer to nature than we are now?
Okay.
And you had technologies that allowed that to happen. So how could societies be shaped differently? And sometimes using those kind of fringy ideas can, you know, allow you to kind of think about structure and levels of importance.
Yeah.
And what ways could society be shaped that, you know, our values would be radically different.
Yeah.
And whether that's what kind of government will we use to govern Mars when we settle it. That's another example of, yeah, that might not happen. It might not be feasible. But it allows you to have a thought. It's all thought experiments.
Right, right.
Right? So you're not believing wholeheartedly in every idea that you hear, but you're playing with every idea that you hear. Like, yeah. Well, if that was true, what would that mean in this instance? You know, so if, you know, the idea that, you know, some people speculate that, you know, as opposed to consciousness being a function of the brain where it's just self-generating within, there's some people that speculate that the brain is more of a television receiver, right, and that consciousness is being beamed in, but the consciousness is a global universal and that we're all tapped into one energy. So, okay, that might not stand up to your to the level of scientific scrutiny,
sure,
when I say, like, oh, is this study relevant for physical therapy? But does it make, like, does it change the way that I think about other people or that I think about my role in the world? And is that a positive way of does that outlook, despite recognizing that it's not bearing out in the science, is that a positive way of kind of reshaping the way that you think about things? And you can toy with these different ideas and kind of get to some unique insights regardless of their you know, capital T truth.
Yeah.
Like, are some things practical but not necessarily true? And yeah, I think that's kind of an interesting idea.
Well, I think, and we're kind of running out of time here, but I think it just comes down to being open-minded, because if you have like a preachy worldview point of view, like where this is the only thing that is true and like it's my way or the highway type thing, like you're dogmatic in the way you approach the world. Like there's no room to expand or grow. It's very rigid. And so like, I think, and if you want to apply this to weightlifting, you just say, well, I think the Chinese method is the best method of weightlifting, right? That's a dogmatic, preachy approach. It's like, oh, well, I teach the Chinese method of weightlifting, and it's the best way.
Or we do and pure it's Bulgarian.
It's the only way. Or we only do pure Bulgarian method training. Or, you know, we only use the German squat volume training program. Like, that is a very dogmatic approach to living and thinking. And so like, if you want to broaden that to other ways and other parts of life, like you can apply that to anything. And I think the worst part, I think I see this, is like with online coaching, like people that are like, oh, I can help you achieve your fitness goals. Like, you want to lose 20 pounds. Like, I could do this. You just have to change your mindset to my mindset. And so like, people might buy into that, but how much do they question the values that these people are trying to instill in them and teach them? Because that's what they're doing, is they're instilling their values and their ideas into you. And so like, if you don't have a critical approach to thinking like, well, why is this important? Why does this work? Or why does this not work for me? Like, because you can tell somebody discipline equals freedom, but what does that really mean to them? Does that mean that having a system of habits and setting yourself for success every day by building upon specific behaviors sets you up for minimizing outside influences into your schedule? Sure, that could mean that to them, but discipline equals freedom could also mean that, like, if you just do this thing that I'm telling you to do, you can be free to live your life, you know, the way you want to. So, like, there's different approaches to how you accept ideas, and then how do you hold them up to the light and say, well, this is true, or this is maybe something that's maybe not true that I don't agree with, but I can adopt parts of it. You know, so, like, if you're dogmatic in your approach and saying, well, this is the only way that it is, and this is the only way that works. Like, even Nietzsche said, like, there is no correct way. Like, there's your way, there's my way, and then there's every other way. But none of them is the correct way. We all get to the same destination through different variety of paths. Or we could get to multiple destinations through a different variety of paths. So the thing is like, saying one road leads to this place specifically, I think, is a bad way to approach thinking. And in general, like, if you wanted, like I said, tie it back to weightlifting, if the best time of the day to train is this day, this part of the day, and, you know, that's the only time that you can do your best, then you're probably gonna have a bad time.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, just maintaining that open-mindedness, being skeptical, not just of other people's ideas, but of the things that you already believe.
Yeah.
You know, always, you know, when you get new inputs, kind of cross-examine yourself and make sure that you're not just taking something for granted that you haven't truly reflected on. Good practice, I think, for this is, you know, for, you know, one thing that I do is I try not to consume news from just one point of view.
Yeah, I like to
try to get, you know, a broad swath, because I don't know if you've ever done this, but if you listen to, you know, Fox talk about something versus NPR, it feels like you're living in two different worlds because they are never talking about the same things.
Right.
And it's just really bizarre. And I think that that allows, you know, for you to just kind of say, okay, well, where is the truth within this? Because everything comes colored through the tint that, you know, the lens of the person that made it.
Sure.
And I think if you're not willing to consume all the data or question everything that you believe, even if it's something that's really important to you, that might even be a sign that that's a thing that you need to look into even more. You know, if it's something that you've always taken for granted, it might be something that, you know, there's not as much there as you think, or I think it means more to believe something after thoroughly questioning than it does taking it for granted. So if you're in a situation where you are working with an online coach, you are working with coaches, and you have kind of critical questions, I think that, you know, you want to be working with someone that'll take the time to answer those.
Yeah.
And
it's not just preaching at you. Like, that's another thing is, like, you can come across tons of them on Instagram just saying, like, this is the method that worked, this is the only method that'll work, and I can show it to you.
Yeah.
Like the guru mentality almost.
Exactly. You know, the person you want to learn from is the person that answers most questions with "it depends" and "I don't know."
Yeah, "it depends" and "I don't know" are pretty, like, standard across the board, because, like, I don't have the answers to everything, and what works for you might just depend on what your situation is.
Yeah, so I think, you know, maintain skepticism. Don't just outright reject everything, but really weigh it against other things. Try to examine the way that your thoughts come up. Think about who's doing the thinking, where are your thoughts coming from, what sort of things trigger those ideas, and get heady and get a little lost with it.
Yeah, because you really can too, and you can go down some rabbit holes with just thinking about the things that you believe in and why you believe them. So, and that could be a whole discussion in and of itself, but we're running out of time, so Anything else, Grayson, you want to add?
No, guys, just don't take our word for it. Think about it, and we'll see you next week for episode 41.
All right, y'all. So if you don't follow us on Instagram, it's at Albuquerque Strength Academy. We have a Facebook. We also have a website, asaweightlifting.com. If you have any questions, hit us up on that. DM us on Instagram. Otherwise, we're lifting no regrets, y'all.
All right, take care.